This is Dave Reed. Is it R-E-E-D or R-E-I-D?
Yes, R-E-E-D.
R-E-E-D, Flight Dynamics Officer for Apollo 14. For years now, we've described the fact that there's a lot going on the front row in Mission Control, what's called the trench, where the Flight Dynamics Officers are watching every time a burn is conducted on a rocket, every time there's some change in trajectory. And one of the men most busy is Dave Reed. In fact, Dave covered launch for Apollo 14 and will be there for other vital parts of the mission. Dave, what's the most exciting part of watching the flight dynamics during launch? What is your responsibility?
Well, my responsibility primarily, Red, is to make sure that the spacecraft and launch vehicle maintain themselves in a safe trajectory envelope throughout the boost phase. We do this by means of a number of displays, as you've seen. Also, we utilize information sources of various types. We use information out of the booster itself, which is telemetered to us on the ground. We also use radar information from a series of radars that are located strategically throughout the launch area and also in the downrange area. The spacecraft itself, above and beyond the booster, also has a great deal of information that we draw on to monitor its actions through the launch phase. All of this information then is filtered through the system that we've developed here in a manner that allows us to maintain and make sure, so to speak, that the trajectory is in a safe posture and in an exact posture to make the orbit that we must have in order to make it onto the moon.
One of the keys to doing this is the five very vivid displays right in front of you on the wall. How do you describe that to a layman, to a non-engineer, all of those lines and little dots moving around?
Well, the way I best explain that is probably it's not unlike something we celebrate over here called the 4th of July. You know, when you get a rocket and you go out and you buy yourself a handful of little rockets and you light one and you stand back, you know, you want to stand back, of course, and you watch it go. Well, that's really what we do here. And all the displays we have up in front allow us to watch it go, so to speak, in different planes of interest, different displays of interest. We watch its velocity. We watch its angle of attack. We watch its altitude. We watch how it's progressing downrange. We watch how it's progressing cross-range. We have serious limits that we must observe in regard to land impacts. We never allow the booster to fly in a position that should something happen to it, it would endanger land or endanger a populated area. So we have abort limits that we must observe. And through the means of these displays and also the help of the range safety officer at the Cape, we make sure that the spacecraft is safe, that the crew is safe, and that, indeed, any land areas beneath the booster is safe.
What sort of time do you have to make fast decisions, and what is the chain of command?
Well, though the numbers I'm about to give you probably sound not like a lot of time, after you've flown a number of these launches, you really have a good deal of comfortable time. I say comfortable, it's comfortable with respect to the amount of training you've had. Your decisions in terms of going from a nominal, non-troublesome situation to one in which you must require an abort range anywhere from 20 seconds down to, say, about a second. It just depends on the type of the failure. Usually, though, you have a forewarning. It isn't like it catches you cold. It isn't like the 1 second you're good and the next second you're not. In almost every case, you have some indication that trouble is either upon you or will be upon you shortly. So you're always primed for that sort of thing.
Now, do you report to the flight director who then makes the decision, or is it sort of a very fast mutual effort?
Well, it depends on the particular type of failure. Now, indeed, we have a chain of command that we like to follow at all times. We don't like to catch the crew off guard with a very quick abort. We'd like to talk to them. We like to tell them, okay, we see this thing developing here on the ground. If it doesn't get any better, we can expect this to happen. Well, we'll try and brief the crew. And the way that briefing is done, I will explain to the flight director, that is the man who's in charge of the operation here, what we're seeing on the plot boards and what we can expect. He, in turn, will interpret me and interpret my meanings of this to make sure he has it correct. And then he will see to it that by means of the capsule communicator that this information is given to the crew. And with this sort of chain of data flow, the crew is then alerted to any possible action that may come. Now, when that action comes, if it does, it's done by means of an abort switch. We don't wait and tell the crew that they have to abort. We actually have a little command button. Actually, it's shaped more like a bat handle, if you will, and that's what I call it, down on my console, that we'll throw. And when we do so, it sends a light, a command to light a light on board the spacecraft. It comes out in big red letters, and it says abort. And now, of course, the crew knows that that is the time that they're to take the consequent action, which is to stop the booster from thrusting and see that the spacecraft gets separated so that they can be in a posture for a safe reentry.
Well, Dave, it sounds like a terribly challenging, terribly pressured, and terribly responsible thing to be in charge of flight dynamics during a liftoff phase with one of these Saturn V.
Well, I've enjoyed it. There have been a lot of us some of us don't enjoy it, I guess is the way to say it. I see that one fellow who's down there in the console now, Charlie doesn't fly with us anymore, and the reason he doesn't, he felt that it was becoming a little bit too much for him. It's not unlike, I think the flight controllers that the FAA uses. I see they have a life expectancy, so to speak, in the control room that's very short. It is a nerve-wracking job, but on the other hand, it's very rewarding. I think the most rewarding thing out of that is probably reflected in the knowledge that you have of our nickname, the Trench. Over the years, we've developed an esprit de corps down there, which is probably, like I say, the most rewarding thing that I've had out of this whole business, is that is to work with a group of men where you work not as a person so much, but more like a machine, yet everybody still is a person sitting there. You can find times when you have need for information and you can turn to the fellow on your right and ask for that information, and even before you ask the question, he's got the answer for you. And you begin to work like this, and after long hours of training, when it all pays off and you get that crew into orbit and you get them down on the moon and you get them back, that probably is the most rewarding thing, and it sure makes up for all the hard times.
Thanks very much, Dave, and we are indebted to you for this vivid description of what a flight dynamics officer does.
Thank you, Red. I'm glad I could help you out.
Dave Reed, flight dynamics officer for Apollo 14. Dave Reed, cut 2, DOI. Dave, flight dynamics really comes into its own again during descent and during what is called DOI, the descent orbit insertion. Why is that on 14?
Well, the reason, Rhett, that we chose this particular type of maneuver on 14 and had chosen it on 13 is that as we find the lunar exploration of the moon needing more and more scientific data in return from the moon, we need to be able to deliver more payload, more scientific payload, more information gathering devices to the surface of the moon. In order to do this, it requires additional energy from the lunar module. Well, one way that we decided that we could save a good deal of energy from the lunar module was to place it into the orbit that it would ultimately have to do the power descent from. Now, in earlier missions, on Apollo 11 and on Apollo 12, the lunar module inserted itself into this low orbit after separation from the spacecraft. But we've chosen, for reasons of delivering more scientific payload, to allow the service module to make this maneuver. Now, as such, in making this maneuver, we find it becomes very tricky. Here we're putting two spacecraft, not just one, but two spacecraft, down into a very low orbit.
Now, within 15 kilometers of the surface.
Right, within 15 kilometers. And this really is not that low. But on the other hand, you have to look out for such things as peaks that appear on the moon. There are mountain ranges, as we know, and of course we expect to have a lot of clearance over them. But the fact that you have just this bare 15 kilometers, or large 15 kilometers, let me say that, if you have any errors whatsoever in the execution of that maneuver, you'll shave off a few kilometers here and there, and you have to watch this to make sure that you still have enough tolerance above the surface of the moon to not endanger the crew.
Now, the DOI maneuver burn comes behind the moon while the spacecraft are out of touch. So as soon as the Aquarius and Kitty Hawk come in range after acquisition of signal, then there's a challenge for Fido to get what's called a quick cut on it. Explain that.
Well, of course, like you say, we've done all the work. We've given them all the information for the maneuver, but it is executed behind the moon. So we wait on the edge of our chair, so to speak, until they pop out from behind, and the first thing we want from the crew is to hear how they executed the burn. Now, they'll give us an indication of how well it went, whether the engine performed as they expected it to. From this, we will then apply that information to the data that is incoming from the radars. Now, the radars will pick them up as they come around, and we'll begin to track them in a very crucial period of time which lasts for about 12 minutes. Now, in 12 minutes' time, we must then take this radar data and determine whether or not they have this 15 kilometers, or if indeed they have picked up a little bit of an error and they're going lower than we like them. And this decision will all have to be made within 12 minutes of receiving information from the crew that they have completed the burn.
After acquisition of signal, I believe it's about 40 minutes until they are actually at the paracentian, or low point across the front side.
That's right. Actually, they have, before they reach the actual low point, it's almost an hour.
But any corrective action has to be taken well ahead of that point.
Right. If you wait until, of course, you're right on top of it, we just don't have enough thrust in the engines to bounce off the moon, so to speak, and safely do that. So we must make this decision rather rapidly, and if the decision is that we are going too low to the moon, then we'll have to pass the crew the information required to immediately do what we call a bailout maneuver. This will be a maneuver that is executed in a fixed attitude. It's one that they've trained for. It's done quick. It's done easy. It doesn't require any fancy targeting, and they'll execute this maneuver, and it will put them very high above the surface and in a safe trajectory that we can recover from later.
Well, we'll be waiting anxiously to hear that word from Fido, from the men in the trench.
Well, we will, too, and I hope the anxious word we give you is we don't need anything. We look great.
Thank you very much, Dave Reed.